finally, a source of raw, real, and honest information on healthcare issues that matter most. Welcome to BS Free MD. From the latest medical information to how to stay sane as a doctor or a patient, no subject is taboo, no BS is allowed. Now, let's welcome your hosts, Drs. May and Tim Hindmarsh.
Yay, we're back again. And this week, we have an amazing guest. We've been corresponding with him, and he is an amazing intellect and writer. And we can't wait for you to hear what he has to say. We are bringing you some COVID update news. So I'm sure this will be on the list of favorites again for the year, because you guys love our updates that we have on anything COVID. So today we're discussing the new medication that's coming out, aka Pfizer-Mectin or
Paxlovid.
Yeah, courtesy of Pfizer. We're going to touch on actually potential benefits, risks of that medication. Is it going to be effective? As well as kind of go back and look at what we have had for outpatient treatment and some inpatient treatment as well. So we're super excited to bring you our guest today.
Yeah, a little encouragement. Dr. Joel Hirshhorn has 50 plus years of scientific experience. We'll get into that. He does a good job of explaining his bio. Really, really deep into evidence, evidence-based science. He actually comes from an engineering background and then did a lot of healthcare work. Really encourage you to subscribe to his Substack. It's free. Tons of information. He has been a prolific writer. Basically what he does, he's retired. He sits down and he reads for hours a day, goes through the actual information, synthesizes it into what he thinks the actual raw data is saying, and then writes articles. So really, really good stuff. And, you know, not really political, more just kind of good nerdy science, which we're lacking.
And
you know?
He actually looks at the science. Imagine that.
Yeah. All right. So here we go. All right. We are very excited to have Dr. Joel Hirshhorn with us. He has a tremendous amount of experience in the scientific world, examining studies, working in the healthcare world, specifically around the science of various aspects of health. So Dr. Hirshhorn, please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Certainly. Well, I started out after getting a PhD. I became a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And I directed a research program between the medical school and the engineering college, working with orthopedic surgeons and pioneering some very original research on new materials for surgical orthopedic devices, hip replacements, knee replacements, things like that. So I was a full professor. I described my life as publishing and perishing, very successful at it, but I got tired of doing that, and got a high position with the U.S. Congress, Office of Technology Assessment. And I directed major studies for the Senate and House, major studies related to health, lots of work on people getting exposed to toxic waste, hazardous waste, Superfund cleanup sites, looking at all those dimensions of health impacts from what industry had been doing, pollution, et cetera, toxic waste, testified as an expert witness, testified over 50 times at Senate and House hearings. I was viewed as a very objective, reliable expert on a lot of health-related issues, and had a lot of fun doing that work, helped write some legislation related again to health issues. After that, I ran a consulting company where, again, I worked on health-related issues, actually serving as an expert witness and technical advisor to community groups all over the United States who were facing exposure to pollution and toxic waste. Did that for a number of years. And then I became a senior official at the National Governors Association, which is the trade association for all the state governors, basically. And again, I directed lots of studies related to health issues. Particularly my favorite area was the connection between community design particularly suburban sprawl, and public health, and that we were creating health issues because we were poorly designing our communities, too much automobile dependence, not enough healthy living, basically. I eventually retired. For the last 10 years, I've been an executive volunteer at a major hospital. My advocacy there is for patient-centered care. But overall, I've been working on health issues for over 50 years and got interested in this pandemic as soon as it began. I began to see data in March of 2020, and this is important. I began to see the data coming from France and from Dr. Zelenko in New York State. And that data in March of 2020 convinced me that we knew how to cure this COVID infectious disease. The guy in France, Dr. Didier, and Dr. Zelenko, at that time, were focusing on using hydroxychloroquine very successfully. And I might note that Dr. Zelenko, who's one of these great pioneering doctors, wrote the preface, the foreword actually, for my book, Pandemic Blunder. Let me plug that. My book came out a year ago. I was the first one, the first book to go after Dr. Fauci and also to be a major advocate for what we call early home treatment. Originally, it was hydroxychloroquine, a cheap, safe, generic medicine used for many decades. Later, we saw the transition to ivermectin, another cheap, safe, generic medicine used around the world, billions and billions of doses safely. And we now know, I keep plugging this in all my articles. I write several articles a month, almost a week now. I have a Substack page, and it's called Pandemic Blunder Newsletter. And people, that's free. I don't charge anyone. And I keep publishing articles looking at all the dimensions of therapeutics. There should be no pandemic. I said this in my book, and I'll say it here today. Virtually all of the deaths that we think were due to COVID could have been prevented. Virtually all of them. I'm on the same page as Dr. Peter McCullough from Texas, a very famous doctor. We've been on a lot of shows together, and I can tell you, he's with me. We're on this 100%, and other great people in medical experts that I trust. All of these deaths could have been prevented if we would have promoted, if Fauci had not blocked the use of hydroxychloroquine and then ivermectin. We could have prevented all of these deaths. I always like to talk about Dr. George Farid and Brian Tyson in California. They've served over 7,000 patients. Nobody has died. Only two were hospitalized and then safely got out. And I keep, in all my articles, I keep pushing that we have the solution to COVID, okay? And it's a criminal disgrace that the public health establishment in the United States has been a total failure. And all of the only winners in this whole situation have been the big drug companies, Pfizer and the other vaccine makers. I write all these articles with all of the data. I keep giving people the data. The vaccines do not work. Not only are they not effective, particularly they are terribly ineffective against Omicron, which is the new dominant variant, but worse than being ineffective, the vaccines are unsafe. There are enormous numbers of people in the U.S. and around the world who have died because they have taken the vaccine shots. I can't emphasize this enough. The numbers are hard to come by, but there are three analyses that I trust. And in the United States, I think at least 150,000 people, Americans, have died just from taking the vaccine shots. And I just did an article. I found some obscure but current CDC data, and I was able to calculate what we say is excess deaths. That is, how many people have died during the pandemic over the normal amount of deaths before the pandemic began? And it's the after and before comparison. And I was able to do calculations using some very good data that nobody else seems to put their hands on. And I can tell you that I think the right number for excess deaths, these are non-COVID deaths, okay? Real non-COVID deaths. Over 400,000 people in the last 2 years have died. Now, let's say about 150,000 of those could have been from the vaccine deaths. But we have what we call a lot of collateral deaths. What about all the Americans who have died because they couldn't get access to good public health care, because they couldn't see their doctors, they couldn't get into hospitals? So we have enormous numbers of what we call collateral deaths, people who commit suicide, people who went on opioid addictions and things like that. So these are the collateral side effects of the pandemic, where, again, huge numbers of people, Americans and all over the world, have died because of collateral effects of the pandemic. And we shouldn't have had a pandemic to begin with, again, because if we would have followed what was known in March of 2020, we would have been using these generic medicines, particularly ivermectin. I'm a strong advocate of ivermectin. I tell people I take it twice a week myself as a prophylactic. And I put out lots of articles showing the data. The data shows that ivermectin works. You know, every time I hear an official from the government talk about following the science, I know we're dealing with a liar, because none of the official people at NIH, FDA, CDC, none of them follow the science, unfortunately. And what I try to do in my book and in my articles is help the public understand the true science, the true facts, the true information, because everyone is just getting lies and propaganda from leftist mainstream media and the government. You basically can't believe hardly anything that comes out of the head of CDC or FDA and all the actions they're taking. Now, they recently approved the new drug from Pfizer, Paxlovid. I think that's a disaster, because let me say this. Number one, they didn't do sufficient testing. They ran through a few months of testing this new drug, which is actually a combination of two drugs. One is a copy of ivermectin. It supposedly acts the same way that ivermectin works, to stop viral replication early in the disease process. But it also includes an HIV drug, and these HIV drugs tend to be rather toxic. And the thing about this new Pfizer drug, not only was it inadequately tested for safety, short-term safety and long-term safety, I don't think many people should take it, because it interacts with many conventional medicines. And if you're worried mostly about elderly people and people with a lot of comorbidities, all the people who go into hospitals with what I call late stage COVID, they all have comorbidities. The big ones being obesity, diabetes, and heart problems, okay? So the Pfizer drug interacts with lots of medicines that elderly and other people take, and supplements also, some supplements. Now, the other thing about what they did in the clinical testing for Paxlovid is they said, well, they gave it to people within 3 days of onset. Now, think about this. Within 3 days. Now they're arguing, well, you can take it within 5 days. Let me tell you, how is any normal American going to know that their symptoms are from COVID? Their symptoms could be from a cold, from the flu. It's not easy to tell that your symptoms are telling you that you have COVID. And you can't get in to see a doctor these days for days or weeks. I say this as an elderly person myself. I have never in my 82 years had such trouble getting an appointment to see my primary care physician, even some of my specialists that I see. It's worse than ever. So whether it's 3 days or 5 days, I can tell you that no ordinary person is going to know within 3 days or 5 days that they have COVID. They can't get a test for COVID easily. That's also a shame in the United States. And then their doctor would have to see whether there's interactions with their medicines. So they've got to use a pretty good computer system to find that out. Then they have to get a prescription, and then they have to get it filled. Okay? But where are they going to get it filled? There's very little of this Pfizer drug around for most people. So I can't see. Now, let me tell you, Israel is very interesting. Most of us who do medical research follow what's going on in Israel. And of course, they have a contract with Pfizer, so they got all the vaccine early. Now they got Paxlovid early. How is Israel handling this new drug from Pfizer? Well, first of all the people in Israel belong to very good, big healthcare systems. They all have computerized systems. They know everything about the health profile of an individual. They can get, and they use taxi cabs to deliver the Pfizer drug within 3 to 5 days. But they can do this because of their computerized system and know exactly whether a patient has COVID, whether there are drug interactions. And then they have a system, which is amazing, that they can deliver the medicine all through computers and taxi cabs, get it into the mouth of a patient in Israel within a 3 to 5 day period. That's amazing. We have nothing like that in the United States, nor does any other country have anything like the Israeli system. I don't think we need the Pfizer drug, first off, because we could use ivermectin. And I push a protocol, it's in my book, and I've been pushing it for 2 years, vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, and quercetin, 4 vitamins and supplements, that people need to boost their innate immune system through healthy living. And one of the great failures of the American public health system in this pandemic is they've never pushed healthy living. I can tell you, I lost 70 pounds in the last 2 years. I got overweight as I grew older. And when the pandemic hit, I said, I got to get healthier. And I know I lost almost a third of my body weight. I know it's possible. I think it's easy to do if you just get smart about it. But the public health system is a total failure. We didn't promote healthy living. Obesity is the number one comorbidity in terms of this virus, the COVID virus. Well, the public health system should have been pushing all kinds of things to deal with the obesity. That's a real pandemic in the United States. Some people look at the data for the U.S. and compare it to other industrialized countries. And the U.S. data in terms of deaths per capita, cases per capita, always looks terrible. Well, it is terrible. And one reason the U.S. data is terrible is because we have the most unhealthy people on the planet. Obesity.
That's what I've been saying all along is, absolutely, you know, when they look at the number of deaths in the U.S., I'm like, well, look at our population. Look at our health. It is off the charts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if you have any questions, let me handle your.
Yeah, I want to rewind just a little bit because this has been like highly enlightening and very, there's just tons of really interesting things that you keyed on. One of the first things that pops into my mind is how long has Israel been using Paxlovid?
Oh, just days, not even weeks. I think it's very new.
So we don't know. So obviously that there's a lag point there as far as, you know, how is it working in that scenario?
Yes.
Cause they have a very unique, they're very unique in the COVID world as far as therapeutics and vaccines because they signed this sort of exclusive contract with Pfizer, which always, you know, the conspiracy tinfoil hat side of me goes, So the only Jewish nation in the world signed a contract with a massive German company. Just seems weird. You know, what could possibly go wrong, yeah. Right? You know. So,
And I want to emphasize that their use of the Pfizer vaccine is absolutely insane. They're now on their third and fourth booster shots. And I want to point out the reason they're going to all the booster shots is because the vaccine does not work. You know, there's all this data showing that the vaccine immunity fades within 3 or 4 months. 6 months, it's almost, the effectiveness is almost all gone. So what's crazy about Israel is they keep pumping their citizens with this Pfizer vaccine, third and fourth shots. People are still going to the hospital. People are still dying in Israel from real COVID disease, okay? Because the vaccine does not work. And
So what do you say to people? Because, you know, there's a part of this, like, especially in the anti-propaganda kind of world, which is, you know, you see things with your own eyes. We've treated lots and lots of COVID patients. Our clinic is new. It's private. We've been blessed with lots of monoclonal antibody. We've treated hundreds of patients with monoclonal antibodies. We kind of get a sense anecdotally for how they work, you know, in the real world. So what do you say to people that say, okay, the vaccine doesn't work to stop the spread? We thought it would, you know, which is when we get to 70% vaccination, everything goes back to normal and you can burn all your masks. Well, that didn't happen. That's pretty clear. But then they hang on to this, but it prevents severe illness and death.
It's saving lives by preventing severe illness and death.
May's sister was a former ICU nurse, and she worked all the way through COVID. And of course, the last year, you know, since the vaccines were out, the vast majority of people that were really ill were unvaccinated. So where's the data on that as this emerges? I mean, is that just like a 6 month or a year long thing, and then it goes away, and thus the endless boosters? Even though, and again, another follow up question on that, I have not seen a single study where they actually studied boosters and had a control group and said, you know, people that are boosted compared to the control group, you know, don't die from COVID, don't go to the hospital. They just looked at antibody levels and they said, well, boost your antibody levels, which to me is insane.
I have data just a week old, days old, from the United Kingdom. You don't get any good data from our CDC, but you do get some good data from Israel, from the United Kingdom, and some other European nations, and the EU. And I have data right now. In fact, I'm trying to put it together for an article on my Substack page. And that data is just new. It's the first week data for the hospitalization and death for the first week of this year, 2022. And I can tell you that the graphs, the data is insane. Something like 80% of the deaths are vaccinated people. And these are boosted people, okay? So your question, these are people who have not only been vaccinated, but most of them have also gotten the booster shots. And these are the people still going in the UK to hospitals and dying. The death rate is very high. I think they're lying in the United States. I've been trying to figure out why we're hearing this complete lie about pandemic of the unvaccinated. It's nonsense. Because when I look at data from the UK in particular, and this is really new data, first week of this new year, and it's clear that nearly all of the deaths, the vast majority of deaths, are from unvaccinated people. So the vaccines are not working. The booster shots are not working. People are going into late stage COVID. This is serious lung problems. And it's all Omicron now also. So this is new data. So it's not Delta. It's Omicron. It's people with boosters, okay, booster shots. So we do have some of this new data coming in. I think there's some big corruption about information in our country. I don't believe that most of the deaths in the U.S. are for unvaccinated people. I just don't believe it at all. First off, the majority of Americans, in fact, have been vaccinated, okay? It's actually a small fraction that are unvaccinated. Not only that, the vast majority of people and some experts that I trust, I work with Harvey Reich from Yale University. You can trust him. About two-thirds of Americans have natural immunity. If you look at all the Americans who have natural immunity because they got seriously, I mean, they were infected at some point, but they didn't have serious effects. They were asymptomatic or they had mild effects, but they got natural immunity. We have the vast majority of Americans either who have natural immunity or were vaccinated and supposedly have some vaccine immunity, which unfortunately I don't think works against Omicron. But we have new data coming in, by the way, that natural immunity does work against Omicron. It's very interesting. The natural immunity is better than vaccine immunity against Omicron. Very important. So now we ought to believe that with this huge percent of the American population having some form of immunity, that they don't account for most of the deaths in hospitals that are being said are COVID deaths. I think something is some lie is going on here. And I was listening to some expert from one of the New York hospitals this morning, and he was saying 50% at least of what they're calling COVID patients are not COVID patients. They're coming into the hospital for other reasons, but every time you go into the hospital, they test you for COVID, and then you get a positive test. That hospital now has a financial incentive to consider you a COVID patient because they will make more money if you are a COVID patient. And there are people who are still getting seriously ill because they didn't get any therapeutics early in the stage. So they're in late stage COVID. And what I wrote articles about this recently. I can tell you that ivermectin has an unusual property that didn't get attention early on. We were always talking about ivermectin as an antiviral, so it would work for early treatment. What we didn't know at the beginning, and what research has shown, I've dug into this, is that ivermectin also is an anti-inflammatory, and it's the anti-inflammatory property of ivermectin that actually saves the lives of people who are in late stage COVID on a ventilator, okay, in sometimes not only are they intubated, but they are given terrible, useless drugs like remdesivir, but they're in ICUs often for many weeks. Now, we have some of these families of these patients who have gone to court and have forced hospitals to give these very ill patients on their deathbed, give them ivermectin. And in those cases where these court actions have succeeded, those patients have walked out of the hospital within days. And the doctor said, well, there's only a 10% chance that they're ever going to live because, and they've been in the ICU for 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, okay? But giving them ivermectin turns out to be an effective treatment for late stage COVID with serious lung problems.
Yeah, that's really interesting because that's always been the hard part for me is that you wrote an article about cognitive dissonance in medicine, which I think is brilliant. I love your Substack. And I'm always a big picture person. If I ever started a consulting firm, it would be called 10,000 foot view. I'm a licensed skydiver. I have over 600 skydives and, you know, so I'm used to looking out the open door and going, okay, that's where I'm supposed to land. And that's where I'm not supposed to land. So big pictures is kind of how my brain works. And so when you look at the just in total data, the more infections, more deaths, and then the new stuff that's coming out, which is really, which you alluded to earlier, which is the all cause mortality death. So excess deaths. And you go, well, if the vaccine worked, why is there more patients in the hospital? Like, forget the cases because case numbers have always driven me crazy. But there's still tons of deaths. There's still, you know, there's still all this weird you know, public policy stuff with, especially with kids, that's causing all sorts of, you know, the diseases of despair and all the collateral damage. And, you know, that's been something that that's always bothered me, which is, okay, if the vaccine really works and it really works even against severe disease, why is there still all these people that have died in, you know, 2021? And like, I can't really make a go of it yet. It's really difficult, you know, again, cognitive dissonance. It's really difficult to go, okay, yeah, but the government's just lying. You know, I mean, that's a tough pill to swallow since we're talking about pills.
What was interesting, by the way, just a quick fact, if you looked at the CDC data, and it's in my article, more people died in 2021 when everyone was getting vaccines, okay, than in 2020 when nobody was getting vaccines. So the death rate went up after we gave vaccines. And I want to say, I have all these new articles, brilliant articles. Some guy in Canada just did an analysis, which is so unbelievable. He looked at countries all over the world. And the bottom line is, what his analysis shows, this is really sophisticated data analysis. The more vaccines you give to people, the more people die. Okay. It's that, that's the bottom line, that vaccines cause more deaths, period. That's what the data shows when it's analyzed accurately, objectively, okay? Why are they dying? Well, because, in fact, some people just die from the vaccines. But it turns out the more that you get vaccines into your body, these new generation that are really not even vaccines, they're just genetic things out there, drugs that people are using, but the more you get them into your body, you actually lower your immune system response. So it makes you sicker in the long term to get vaccinated, which is why they see higher death rates in countries with higher levels of vaccination. I always like to point out the countries where ivermectin has been used. They all have low vaccination rates. India, Indonesia, the latest data from Japan. We have a bunch of countries where the pandemic numbers are very good, actually, where they've essentially knocked out the pandemic, especially in most of the big India states, and the vaccine levels are very, very low. So when you have a combination of low vaccine use and high ivermectin use, then you get into a very positive situation. But in most of the first world countries, the industrialized countries, it's a very bad situation because we're still pushing. Again, I think some of the best doctors, hundreds of doctors, I've signed all kinds of petitions and things saying we ought to stop mass vaccination. The mass vaccination is not the solution in this pandemic. And it may take years for the truth to come out. But eventually the truth will come out. I think it's coming out slowly now, that in fact, the vaccine, mass vaccination, is a complete fraud. It's only positive in terms of making billions of dollars for Pfizer and the other vaccine makers, okay? All of the executives of Pfizer and these other companies, they've all become billionaires literally overnight because of the vaccine market, basically. So, but I interrupted.
No, I mean, it makes, that's been the thing that's bothered me with this whole pandemic. And I think even patients, non-medical people that are, you know, have been seeing it as well. It just seems very obvious where's the money trail, and why have we been pushing just the vaccine? I mean, so at the beginning, we were thinking, okay, potentially this is maybe going to be something that's helpful, a tool in the pandemic to vaccinate people if it's going to be effective. But what, aren't we doing anything else to keep people out of the hospital when they first get sick? But no, it was when we've been working COVID clinics since COVID began. And initially it was tell them to go home and just try to get better until they're in the hospital. And we look at each other and think, where in the history of disease and patient care have we ever told a patient with anything, just go home, like take 2 aspirin and don't call me until you're in the hospital? Like never. I mean, even we talked about the HIV, you know, crisis. When that came out, we were throwing everything at people to try to suppress the HIV. And it was one experiment after the other, what we could do. And I said to Tim, like, aghast, and a lot of our colleagues, this is insane. And now when people get sick with a fever, and kids, and if you've got a fever or a cough or you can't breathe, you can't even come into our clinic because you have COVID. We won't even see you. Like, it's the insanity of it is, like, when did doctors stop taking care of their patients until they were in the hospital when it was too late? I said, can you imagine if you did that, if you had like a urinary tract infection, and, well, I'm not going to give you anything until you're septic and dying, or I'm not going to treat your rotting limb until you're, I mean, it's just blowing my mind. Are so that's when for us as medical professionals and now the lay people have gone, this is crazy, because they're pushing this vaccine only, and no one's allowed to even try the hydroxychloroquine, the ivermectin, the high dose vitamin C, the vitamin therapies, the combinations. Let's look at what we have already, gazillions of medications existing that are safe, and let's try those. That's where the whole conspiracy to me just like lights up. When in the history of medicine have doctors not been allowed to try to keep people out of the hospital?
Well, one of you not being allowed to use an off-label drug, and the example I use all the time is, you know, in the state of Oregon where we live, a 15-year-old woman without parental consent can go to a gender clinic and get off-label testosterone because that's politically acceptable to do. But if I write a prescription for ivermectin and the only code in the chart is COVID, they will report me and my license is in jeopardy. So tell me how that makes sense, right? I mean, it's political.
It's like you're committing this crime by giving someone ivermectin, which, you know, I laugh, of course, at everyone calling it horse pills because, you know, amoxicillin is a horse pill too. We give that to our cats and dogs and horses, yet ivermectin gets labeled as the horse medicine. Well, but, you know, it makes no sense.
None of it does. And my book, Pandemic Blunder, which is still available on Amazon, it came out early in 2021. And so I was pushing, you know, therapeutic early home treatment in my book. And I explained in my book that Fauci had stopped the use of early home treatment. And it was a criminal. It was a criminal act that he did. I said in my book, he ought to be prosecuted, criminally prosecuted. I think Fauci is responsible for all of the disaster, the deaths, all of the pain and suffering. He is the one person that I blame more than anyone else for what has happened, the mismanagement of the pandemic. I wrote an article. I used the term personalized medicine, and I wrote an article or two that, you know, good doctors, good physicians have always tried to use personalized medicine. The drug should fit the patient, okay? You know, that's their Hippocratic oath. First, do no harm, you know? So it's been a failure of the medical establishment. Unfortunately, the medical establishment, the public health establishment, has gone along with the corrupt government actions by NIH, FDA, and CDC. And that's all led by Fauci, essentially. So it's sad that most doctors, I tried it myself many months ago. I asked my physician, my personal physician, you know, I would like a prescription for, I think, ivermectin. I asked him for. I said, listen, I've researched this to hell. I have a book out on, you know. He said, I can't do it. My computer system won't even let me do it because there is no approved use of ivermectin. I can't give you a diagnosis for anything that will allow my computer system to give me a prescription for ivermectin. This is corporate medicine, okay? Because he's part of a big hospital healthcare system. So this is what's sad. Doctors, unfortunately, most of them, unless they're independent, like you apparently, most physicians in the United States, their hands are tied or they're risking their jobs. I get these emails. I'm trying to help physicians who are losing their jobs. I want to emphasize, I have several physicians who've contacted me. Very sad stories. They have lost their jobs because they were trying to use ivermectin in their hospitals.
Oh, I mean, I know it. You know, you even mentioned ivermectin as a physician, as a treatment option anywhere in public on social media, like I have done in forums. And then people threaten to report you to the board for medical misinformation and malpractice. And I'm like, you're kidding. You're kidding me. Like, it's like a war. It is really, it blows my mind. I never could see medicine going down this path.
Yeah, I don't use social media. Career. So,
no, smart.
I never use social media, smart. So I'm free to do and say whatever I want. But I've done over 100 podcasts, and some of them, you know, tried to put it up on YouTube, and of course, it doesn't last.
So. Right. So I've been a little skeptical and haven't researched a whole lot on Paxlovid. I mean, other than, you know, the little bit we've been doing, because I guess I'm already biased in with what we've got for the flu currently, which, you know, the
Tamiflu.
Yeah, Tamiflu, which is, you know, for a while, for a few years, I thought, maybe it works. And then it was kind of like a dice throw. Sometimes it would seem to help people. You mean I've taken it 3 times. One time I thought it was a miracle drug. Another time it did nothing. Sometimes it helps people with certain situations. Sometimes it doesn't. So we so far haven't really had very good antiviral treatments for flu, you know, for the flu. I'm not talking
for these kind of respiratory
viruses. Right. So that's, I mean, I've already been kind of a skeptic with this one because it's come out so quickly. So is there, I mean, I know that you're not on the medical background, but I mean, is there anything different in it that you'd say maybe it might work better than Tamiflu because it's kind of got more of the HIV medications, or is that going to be a detriment because of all the potential interactions with medications?
Well, I don't have a lot of confidence in this new Pfizer drug. I wonder why physicians, well, see, they're trapped. Physicians will feel that they have to prescribe the new Pfizer drug because they can't prescribe, let's say, ivermectin.
Anything else.
Okay? So now we put them into this trap. Pfizer is very smart. I think, and I said this in an article months ago, I think they see the end of the vaccine business coming. And they, Merck and Pfizer, were clever business people. They said, listen, this bonanza that they have in terms of vaccines, that's not going to last. So we have to create new drugs that we can, you know, create patent and all that stuff and make them very expensive. So, you know, the new Pfizer drug is incredibly expensive. I don't think it's going to be that successful because I don't think people are going to get it fast enough. It has to work. The whole theory behind it is to stop viral replication, which is that first stage of COVID disease. Now, can you act quickly enough? That's the whole thing. Can you act quickly enough to get that in, and will it work effectively, and will it be safe? We have no data, really, on long-term safety of the Pfizer drug. So why would why would a physician give it? You know, if a physician was really thinking a lot about it, he might question the legitimacy of giving a drug that was rushed through, and I mean rushed through, and FDA didn't even use their own approval process involving outside experts. They didn't do that. They skipped that. So the whole situation looks corrupt from the beginning. And so maybe the drug will be used. I don't know. Around where I live on the East Coast, it's not readily available. Very little is available, actually. Anyway, but I have a negative view of the Pfizer drug again. And people, physicians better be very careful. The drug interaction is a big issue. In Israel, they are dealing with it because they have a very sophisticated system that can look at the drug interactions very quickly and very effectively. And they can get the drug into the hands of people very, very quickly. If you take the Pfizer drug too many days too late, the viral replication process will have already begun and gone too far. So the therapeutic won't really work.
I mean, there's so many things as far as the infrastructure, the size of the country, the number of people, the infrastructure, the medical system, all that that we've talked about in getting that.
See, we're doing almost exclusively COVID in our clinic. And so we've had great success with getting people in right away. In the urban, more urban centers, it is a total disaster. So I actually have what I'm looking at is I have from the Oregon Health Authority, because we're signed up with them to get monoclonal antibodies, which is distributed through the Oregon Health Authority from the federal government. And there are this coming out week, and it'll be every other week, a 2-week cycle. There's 4,120 doses for the entire state of molnupiravir, which is the Merck drug, which doesn't appear to do anything. And then there's 1,040 doses of Paxlovid for what's our population, like 4 million, 3.5 million, something like that. So
it's
what a waste.
I mean, being on a forest fire,
exactly. And it's even worse. You know, I live in a much higher population area, outside Washington DC, and so I think it's going to be an insignificant factor in terms of pandemic management.
So let's talk about what I think is what I believe is the ultimate pandemic management, which is what's managed every single pandemic in the history of mankind, which is natural herd immunity. I was out very late last night. I was at a rock concert, and I was trying to explain this to a lot of my friends who are really quite diverse as far as backgrounds and, you know, political bend and all this kind of stuff. And I said, look, you know, what stopped every pandemic has been, up until very recently with things like polio and smallpox has been natural herd immunity. You know, Black Plague stopped because eventually it either killed enough people or, enough people got partially ill and, you know, immunized themselves. So do you believe that Omicron is from, you know, data, especially in other countries, is mild enough that it's just going to spread like fire and kind of burn this out and be the greatest passive immunization, to date?
Yeah. I agree with that school of thought, that it looks that way to me. You know, a lot of people think we already have herd immunity in the United States. I think Omicron will definitely increase immunity in the population without serious effects, okay? Why some people will get seriously ill from Omicron, and they are, I have no doubt that some people are getting seriously ill from Omicron. But these are probably inherently very unhealthy people. These are people with lots of comorbidities who don't have a healthy lifestyle, obese, diabetic, heart disease, you name it. And so some people will always get seriously ill, even for something like Omicron. You see, I did a couple of articles. I follow a French research guy named, I can't think of it now, Fantini, a great French researcher. And he had done all of this research analyzing the Omicron, all the variants, actually, of COVID. And he was the first one, quite a while back, to do enough research and actually calculate and showed that Delta would be devastating. And he calculated what's called the transmissibility index of each variant. He looked at the molecular structure of each variant. Fantastic research, very sophisticated research. And then Omicron comes along. So he does a calculation using his methodology and his research capabilities. And he calculates Omicron is not going to be as bad as Delta. It has all of these mutations. And he's the guy who looked at the nature of the mutations in Omicron. And he figured out that all of these mutations actually lower the transmissibility of Omicron relative to Delta. It was still higher than the older variants, but it wasn't as bad as Delta. But he also showed through his research that vaccines would not work against Omicron. And I have all this data now from Danish work and UK work and all these various countries that shows, in fact, exactly that, that the vaccines work less effectively against Omicron as compared to Delta. So some people are still people keep talking about highly transmissible Omicron. You see that in every media story, you know, highly transmissible Omicron.
This sounds like a cold to me.
Well, it turns out what I want to emphasize, it looks like Omicron is so transmissible, not because it is inherently transmissible. The molecules that get into the air are not very special. The reason it looks transmissible is that none of the immunity that people have, most of that immunity is not working against Omicron. So we get this picture that all of these people are getting sick from Omicron. And these are vaccinated people, I want to emphasize, that are getting sick because the data is absolutely clear that the vaccines are very ineffective against Omicron, much worse than their effectiveness against Delta. Okay? So this is the situation we're living in now. And why some people are ill and dying, again, I think those deaths could be avoided in hospitals if they started to use ivermectin. Remdesivir, which they're still using in hospitals, does not work. Not only doesn't it work, it's dangerous. It has terrible side effects in terms of organ damage. So nothing they're doing in ICUs, this is what disturbs me, the protocols being used in American hospitals for very ill COVID patients, late stage COVID, serious breathing lung problems, okay? It does happen even with Omicron. Their protocols don't work. And I think, they know it doesn't work because their patients are dying. And we know from, again, a small number of people who've tried the ivermectin in late stage COVID, we know that that is a solution. It does work. Nothing that the hospitals are using now, the new Pfizer drugs, they're not even aimed at late stage COVID. So, we're dealing with this terrible hospital situation where people are dying after weeks in the ICUs. And the hospitals are making a fortune, unfortunately. The bills are incredible. For you stay 6 weeks, 8 weeks in an ICU in an American hospital, you can imagine what the bills are. And maybe some of them have good insurance that will cover it, like Medicare, but not everyone has that.
Right, right. So my understanding on Paxlovid, I know this, I'm fairly confident that it's with the Merck drug as well, was that they're actually repurposed old HIV drugs that they modified. You know, they added a molecular, an enantiomer here or
right.
A hydrogen bond or whatever the case. So it's not, you can say that go after ivermectin, it's an old medication, but that's the whole point. It's repurposed for a different purpose, and we have like tremendous amount of safety data. But my understanding is both of the oral antivirals for COVID were actually repurposed old drugs that didn't really work that well for their initial, they had them on the shelf, they blew the dust off of them, they did some molecular right. magic to it, and they go, oh, look, we have a new drug.
Well, that's it. They had to play around. I've been told by some experts that they basically played around with ivermectin. And they had to play around enough with ivermectin so that they can get a patent, so that, they can get a proprietary drug out of it.
Right.
Okay. But when you look at how does Paxlovid work, it works supposedly, in theory, exactly like ivermectin, except ivermectin is very complex and it's, we still can't even figure out, again, all the aspects of ivermectin, why it works so well. But I get people emailing me all the time saying, hey, I took ivermectin and in 2 or 3 days, I was well. after getting, you know, what they thought they had, or they had tests saying they had gotten COVID. So I don't think this new drug makes any medical sense. Again, people are going to have to be very careful in taking it. And now you have this other antidepressant drug, fluvoxamine, which is also being touted. And I must admit, I think there's probably just as good data for showing that fluvoxamine works against COVID as the new Pfizer drug. And fluvoxamine is, again, another cheap generic drug, okay, been around for a very long period of time. It's originally an antidepressant, anti-anxiety kind of drug. It seems to work pretty well against COVID. I just got some. I order all my stuff from India. I've told people it's on my Substack page. I put the actual contact information on where people can order ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. They can order fluvoxamine too from two companies that I use in India. I have a thousand. I always tell people this story. I have 1,000 pills of ivermectin because I just tried different companies. And by the way, these are all, when you get ivermectin from India, there are 12 milligram tablets. If you can find ivermectin in the United States, which is very difficult, they are 3 milligram tablets. They charge usually about $5 per 3 milligram tablet. I get 12 milligram tablets from India, 12, and it's 30 or 40 cents a tablet, okay? The same with fluvoxamine, relatively cheap. I just got a package from India. Same with hydroxychloroquine. So, because people were always asking me, well, how do I get this? I don't like them using the ivermectin, which is meant for animal use. They have to play around with figuring out how much to take. And I've never been supportive of that because I know you can get, now the problem with what you're getting it from India, it takes a while. The package, you know, it takes a month or so after you order it. But my wife got some ivermectin in the United States. We wanted to see, she got a prescription, had to pay money to get a prescription from a telemedicine doctor. And she paid $5 a pill for 3 milligrams. And I said, this is crazy. This is absolutely insane. And you can't get it, by the way. Merck stopped producing it, interestingly enough. Why did Merck stop producing ivermectin? Well, they don't want to sell ivermectin. So it's hard to, I'm not sure anyone else is making it anymore in the United States.
Wow. Yeah,
interesting.
Wow.
There is another question that I think is really important because I think it can really give hope to some people. How did you lose 70 pounds in 2 years as a 82-year-old person when, you know, the pounds just don't come off because I'm too old?
Yeah.
You know, we've all told ourselves that.
No, it's crazy. Again, I always followed the medical literature, and I was convinced by all the stuff, scientific stuff that I read, that if I would just stay with a low carbohydrate, high protein diet, not worry about fat very much, but focus on not eating the worst carbohydrates, all the white carbs, the bread, the pasta, the rice, the noodles. Stay away from the carbohydrates. Try to focus on a daily high protein diet, lots of vegetables, lots of fruits. And it wasn't a problem. And it's not, I stopped losing weight many months ago, actually. So I have been stable for more than 6 months now. Absolutely. But the trick is weighing yourself every morning. You know, you got to use that weight information to influence what you're going to eat that day in terms of calories, in terms of, you know, a limited maybe amount of carbs. I found all of these wonderful products out there. There is a fake kind of pasta that you can find. I buy it in my Safeway supermarket. It's made from some sort of vegetable. It's basically zero calories. It looks like pasta. It feels like pasta, but it's not pasta. It's zero calorie, vegetable product.
Sounds like cardboard to me.
Or it sounds like voodoo.
It's a wonderful product. And I'm a great cook, and I use it all the time. And I do a lot of wok kind of cooking. So it wasn't that difficult to lose a lot of weight if you don't drink alcohol, stay away from the carbs, stay away from sugar. See, the thing about body chemistry, alcohol, sugar, and white carbs all do the same thing in your body, basically. Mm-hmm. It's chemically speaking. So if you stay away from alcohol, sugar, and carbs, that's the big trick. And just focus on a pretty high protein diet. And don't worry about vegetables and fruits. Eat all you want of those. That's it.
No, that's.
It sounds like we've been preaching for the past 30 years.
Well,
it
sounds like what she's been preaching to me for the last 30 years of our marriage. So I hear you there. Well, we could go on for hours. This has been really great. I love hearing from people that are really strong in the scientific community, but don't. So they're kind of unjaded from a lot of the things that we have to deal with as clinicians, where, we're inundated with information from pharmaceutical companies, et cetera, et cetera, where we're in our own sort of bubble, our own sort of groupthink. So it's always nice to get from the outside, because, we rely on experts, just like you rely on the clinical expertise of any physician that you see. We rely on the scientific expertise of people that, look at studies all day long, which we don't do. Once again, thank you so much for joining us.
This has been wonderful.
Yeah, it's been really, really great. And what we'll do is we'll get some of those articles your Substack and everything, and we'll put it on our show notes so people can get the actual source information for your Substack.
We will link that.
For that Canadian study that you were talking about, for maybe some from the French scientist with regards to, the epidemiological stuff.
Yes.
I really like to link a lot of hard data so people can look back and go, we're not just crazy tinfoil hat wearing people that think everyone should take ivermectin.
Right. And we can definitely, we'll link your book as well, which is still available on Amazon, correct?
Absolutely.
Miracle.
And it was the first book. It was the first book to go after Fauci. Now other books have come out, but my book came out the beginning of 2021, and I went after Fauci. Some people were amazed that I got it published, but I got it. It was up on Amazon right away. It's been very successful on Amazon. Very cheap. The Kindle edition is either no money or very little money. It's still valid today. The book. I wrote the book because I used to be a professor and educator, and I wanted to write a book for the general public to really, really inform them with good data. The book is filled with data, and all the websites too. I give people all the many websites that they can go to get access to the data.
Perfect. That's what they're after, and us as well, obviously.
Yeah. Excellent.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be with you. I appreciate it.
Well, that was awesome. I love, and I said it a few times during the interview, I really love getting the perspective of somebody who isn't a clinician. We may do a show on this entire topic, but the peer pressure in medicine to kind of go along with a narrative or the herd is really profound. I actually wrote it to, I can't remember who I wrote it to. It was somebody in, one of the scientists I was corresponding with. And I said, I might have even been Joel. I said, physicians are more prone to peer pressure than, a couple girls behind the school in eighth grade with a pack of smokes.
I don't know. I kind of liken it more to the earth is flat and everyone in science believes it.
Well, and it's just, it is. And that's the thing that's really interesting, because we're going to find out that a lot of the people on the skeptical side, which, we obviously are, if there's a side, there's stuff that we got wrong.
Oh, absolutely. I think they,
but on the other hand, the people that speak with the most ferocious certainty are almost always wrong.
That frightens me. I mean, you have to be humble, willing to admit when you're wrong, and willing.
I mean,
to
even Peter McCullough came out in on Joe Rogan and was really dogmatic about you can't get COVID twice, and then he backpedaled the next like a week or two later, and he actually called Robert Malone because he knew Robert was going to be on Joe's show. And he was like, no, with Omicron, I think the game has changed, and I think you can get it more than once. Mm-hmm. And so because the science evolves, and you evolve with it if you're humble and you're willing to see things. I mean, I looked back at messages that we were getting from listeners, and I think it was February of 2021, which seems like 4,000 years ago. You know, people go, oh, time goes by so fast. Yeah, unless you're in a freaking then it tends to go slower. And the literal quote that I had was, herd immunity is how you get out of a pandemic. The vaccine should hasten herd immunity, ergo the vaccine is the fastest way out of the pandemic, which is exactly what I thought in February of 2021, and exactly why I got vaccinated in January, because I felt, you know, the data wasn't great, but it didn't appear to be horrifically dangerous, et cetera. Well, you look now. And, you know, especially having got the vaccine, having got COVID, there's no way in hell I'd get a booster. And you look at like the abject failure of the vaccine to do exactly what we were told it was going to do, which the science and Pfizer itself said they didn't know if it did, which was prevent spread. And so now we're seeing all this other stuff that you can't really explain. I mean, is there antibody dependent enhancement? Maybe you can make an argument for or against that. There's all of these downstream consequences that people like great virologists and vaccinologists like Geert Vandenbosch were, you know, warning about all of this kind of, you know, these kind of things like this could happen, that could happen. I mean, before the vaccine was available in November of 2020, I was reading about vaccine-associated disease enhancement and what vaccines had happened in. And so I was, you know, I was sort of primed for some of this. And now where you see absolute failure, at least failure of transmission, maybe success in preventing serious illness, at least so far in the United States, it appears to be that that's the case, but God only knows. And you're like, you change your mind because science means that you're going to change your mind.
Calm down. You're really excited. You're really excited today.
Well, I'm ready to go to work and
kick some COVID.
Kick some COVID in the nards.
I can tell. All right. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we can't wait to bring you more like this. I will link his book and his Substack in our show notes. Send us your questions, ideas. We love your feedback. Keep sending it. See you next time.
It's no secret that medicine is a bit uptight. That's why Tim and I created BS Free MD, to mix things up a little and have fun in the process. Besides, we are having these exact same discussions all the time, so we thought we might as well invite everyone to the party. If you really like us, you can get plenty more and maybe see one of Tim's cool tattoos on our Instagram or Facebook pages at BS Free MD. See you next time.
While we try to keep BS Free MD as raw and real as possible, we can't be held responsible for any medical decisions or discussions had as a result of what you've heard on the show. We know, bummer. But the truth is, we really do care about your questions. So feel free to reach out to us by email at doc@bsfreemd.com. All right, we got to do 2, 3, 4...
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Kick, cover it in the dick.
Send that to Crowder. Maybe he can make a ditty out of it. There once was a man from Sweet Home.
Oh, let's see.
Was about the size of a gnome.
There once was a man named Fauci.
No.
Who liked the jab, the Fauci ouchie.
Once was a man from Sweet Home.
He said with a grin.
Who was the size of a gnome. He put on his...
We're going to do a Fauci limerick, though, I guarantee you. That is an absolute 100% promise.